Penguin Random House Audio presents The Drama Teacher by Coran Zalkus, read for you by Elizabeth Nolden. It's good to possess a sense of truth, but you also need to have a sense of lies. Konstantin Stanislavski, An Actor's Work. Gracie Mueller. I guess you are kind of curious as to who I am, but I am one of those who do not have a regular name. My name depends on you. Richard Brautigan, in Watermelon Sugar. Chapter 1. The desk clerk walked behind me with purpose, adjusting the name tag on his lapel. Poor casting, I thought, when I saw his reflection in a mirrored alcove. His expression seemed to be aiming for Stern, but his pimpled chin gave him a look of teen angst. If I'd seen him looking as cheesed off anywhere but there, at the Odell Resort and Spa, described by Forbes as a modern chateau nestled at the foot of the Catskill Mountains, I would have guessed he'd failed maths or been friend-zoned by a girl. "Hi there. Ma'am?" He was so square you could wage a game of chess on him, and I reckoned he had the sort of bohemian parents that were a regional trend. Some failing authority figure had left him with no other course of rebellion. When sex, drugs, and a vegetarian diet are the norm, only steady employment has shock value. "Looking for something?"
"Mummy!"
Kitty pulled the belt of my white cotton robe. My hair was swept over my left breast, where the hotel's logo should have been. "Darling, please don't tug." The robe, a gift from my first husband, Oz, was my last bastion of luxury. A few years earlier, it had been my Christmas present. It was the last thing Oz gave me before he was indicted for fraud. Fitz, who was 5 going on 30, echoed,
"Kitty, Mum said don't tug."
I had planned that afternoon for Fitz in particular. He'd had his first ever swim in Cannes, surrounded by super yachts, but he'd grown sadly accustomed to the Catskill community pool, where the deck chairs are spattered with birdshite. "You're so very kind," I told the clerk. "We're meeting friends." In general, I could count on my accent to give me an air of refinement. Back in my native Britain, people heard culture clash when I spoke. The British associated my cut glass accent with grasping, or some variant, putting on airs. I'd grown up striving for the upper class's attention to H's and T's, but fell into the dirty habit of elongating my vowels so that I might fit in with my working class mates. But in the States, there was only one type of English accent. Upstate New Yorkers assumed I was educated and worldly, cleverer than they were. Shopkeepers praised my pronunciations, vitamins or oregano, as though I were a rare exotic vocalist. The other mums at Fitz's play school treated us as though we ate cucumber sandwiches for tea and hoarded money offshore. But this young man seemed impervious to my BBC English.
"I can look up your friend's room number at the front desk."
I pored over my mobile's blank screen, pretending I'd received a new message. "Oh, it appears our friends have been waiting by the pool for 30 minutes. Shall we go meet them, Kit? Fitz?" Just then, my phone legitimately vibrated. It was my current husband, Randy, calling from Florida. I gestured to the clerk. "One minute, sorry." "Hiya, Randy. You all right?"
"See. Hi. Can you hear me?"
His voice was breaking up, either a result of the looming mountains or the resort's thick walls. I slowed the children near an ebony sideboard and watched them shuffle travel brochures at twice the speed it took me to return them to their proper piles. "I hear you, but it's not a brilliant time. We're late meeting friends."
"Where?"
he asked, a question that was shorthand for, "How much will it cost?" I turned my back to Fitz. "The YMCA, I said softly.
"How's it going with your social security number?"
The question always hit me like a punch to the solar plexus.
"Look, Mummy, a choo-choo,"
Kitty said. Leaflets for a railway museum rained like war propaganda across the lobby's pristine floor. "Going well?" I laid a hand on Fitz's elbow, stopping him seconds before he wiped his nose on a silk sofa arm.
So you got it? Randy asked.
Getting it.
I just don't understand why it's taking so long, or why you didn't request a social when you applied for your visa.
It was an oversight. 2 years ago, I'd applied for the green card that would have entitled me to a social, but the letter that arrived from the Department of Homeland Security informed me that the documentation I'd submitted was incorrect. Rather than going back to Britain, I'd faked an immigration interview at 26 Federal Plaza on a day when I knew Randy had a real estate closing. I took a bus to Manhattan, treated myself to a steak at Marc Joseph, and returned to Catskill 6 hours later with a story that held him over until a forgery mill website delivered my novelty resident card. I'd waited until the morning after his bachelor party to show it to him, rightfully suspecting he'd be too hungover to notice the smeary blotches under the laminate. The phony green card wasn't even the biggest lie I had brought into our marriage. On paper, at least, I was still married to Oz, because filing for divorce would have created a paper trail, and police wanted me for my role in his bogus property deals. Randy, still on the phone, shifted into estate agent mode.
Gracie, you need your own credit line. Now. That way, if we need to borrow money, no one will know we missed a few mortgage payments.
A few? You said last month was the first time. He lowered his voice.
Gotta go. A lead just walked in.
I hung up, herded the children through the sliding glass doors, and slammed headfirst into the day's crippling humidity. It was 2010, the hottest summer on record in New York. The gray sky, unexpectedly bright, seared my eyes. Waves of hot exhaust rippled across the parking lot. Fitz urged Kitty to hold onto his back and run in tandem.
Come on, be my jetpack!
Careful, I warned, as the game almost always ended in skinned knees.
We are being careful, Fitz said, with a look that accused me of needless drama.
The pool gate squealed on its hinges, and a few women rubbernecked at the sound. I had never put much stock in vanity, but I wondered what those freshly waxed and mud-bathed ladies saw when they looked at me. Had they met me at Guildhall, my dramatic arts college, they would have seen a loosely defiant young woman with a burst nest of ginger curls and an attitude that said drinking cider on wet lawns was just as educational as reciting Shakespeare. I sang in a twee pop band and rolled immaculate joints. My fashion choices were daring, and my mates even more so. Hot pants and kimono, with a crusty bisexual chap from the Royal College on my arm. I wouldn't say strangers instantly noticed when my younger self walked into a room, but I had a certain heady trifecta. Ambition, charisma, and a fair bit of luck. By my early 30s, Fitz was in a fashionable sling across my chest, and dreams of acting in the West End were a distant memory. But even then, I'd retained an air of sophisticated rebellion. I wore Peter Pan collars with black leather miniskirts. I peppered my speech with French and obscenities. I could act at ease in 15-bedroom country houses, and even help Oz woo investors for Turkish condominiums he didn't own. Then, of course, there was the indictment and the separation, and my mid-30s found me in America, married to Randy, a top-earning realtor. Too old to play the ingenue, I took on the role of the pampered housewife instead. Randy supported me by flipping houses, leasing out his income properties, and closing on 2 or 3 real estate deals every week. And I lived a life of relative leisure, organizing menus and playdates, collecting Le Creuset cookware and Jo Malone perfumes, getting pregnant with Kitty. Then, just when I didn't lack for anything, the real estate market collapsed and life demanded austerity measures. If anyone noticed me that day at the Odell, it was apt to be in pity, not awe. Having quit the salon, my hair was reaching red-gray. Without a gym membership, my body was slackening at the midriff and hips, widening and collapsing like a carnival tent after the fun's over and the punters have gone home. I panned the poolside, taking in our chaise options. There were no friends expecting us, of course. I'd planned on letting Fitz down gently.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?